No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith. Since the prehistoric ages and the days of ancient Greece, walk down to the Middle Ages, planet Earth kept going through changes, and then the Renaissance came, the times continue to change, nothing stayed the same, but they were
so, you know, I'm looking towards Monday, and the hope is that Professor Ford testifies. Look, it's going to be brutal, but if she doesn't testify, I think it gives the Republicans the ability to say, well, you know, yeah, she didn't show up. We could 5 minutes, we're going to have the vote and just ram Kavanaugh right through. It's going to be brutal for her, but I'm looking to see who's going to be this generation's Arlen Specter. Who's going to say, well, are you sure you weren't fantasizing? Are you sure it wasn't something that you just, you know, kind of, maybe you were mistaken, or as Orrin Hatch said, you know, maybe you're mixed up just a little bit. Who's going to be that guy? Will it be Ted Cruz? Will it be that creepy dude? Will it be Grassley? Will it be Hatch? Will it be Lee? Will it be any of them? Or all of them? And that's the question I'm going to ask my next guest. Our good friend Sarah Kendzior is back. The fantastic podcast, Gaslit Nation. You have to check it out. A new episode out today. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So who do you think, let's start with that. Do you think she's going to testify on Monday? Do you think Dr. Ford comes forward on Monday?
It's hard to say because, you know, for one, her physical safety is in jeopardy. You know, she's currently basically on the run. You know, she had to leave her home with her own children because of constant death threats. So that creates, you know, both an obstacle, and I think she's possibly weighing, you know, this for her state of mind and the safety of her family. She's also asking for an FBI investigation of the case, which they're refusing to grant, you know, which I think is a horrifying thing. Obviously, this should be investigated. There's a witness, you know, Kavanaugh's friend, Mark Judge, you know, who was there for this. They're not having him testify. This obviously reeks of a cover-up, and I think that there's, you know, indications that the Republicans knew about this incident way in advance, and they really put out an elaborate PR blitz, you know, starting off by presenting him as this wholesome, you know, carpool dad, as an entire op-ed in the Washington Post proclaimed him, you know, which I thought was strange at the time. I was like, what does this have to do with the Supreme Court?
Yep.
Now we kind of know. He packs his hearings with 15-year-old girls sitting behind him to show that, you know, 15-year-old girls love him. They're comfortable with him. And then, of course, there's the 65 names that they magically were able to produce of people who knew him in high school 35 years ago, which, you know, they said they got these overnight. I mean, that's all. Yeah, I'm not supposed to swear. That's all nonsense. I think it indicates that they know what he did. They don't care who it hurt, and they don't care in general that women are assaulted and that somebody who assaults women can sit on the Supreme Court. They're perfectly fine with that.
No, they're perfectly fine with it because, well, they don't care.
Yeah. It's a horrifying message because I think, you know, initially, it almost mirrors, you know, the Russia case or other cases in certain ways. Like, at first, they deny it. At first, they're like, oh, no, you know, this didn't happen, or we're not this kind of people. And they sort of give this, you know, false veneer of adhering to baseline, you know, human values and American values. And then it's like they just, once they realize they're at the point where they're going to get caught, it just becomes, it doesn't matter. You know, they're saying things like, does it really matter if a drunken 17-year-old tries to rape somebody? He's just a drunken 17-year-old. Like, as if that in any way affects, you know, the horror and the trauma experienced by the victim. And, you know, it was kind of the same thing with Russia, where at first it was like, I have nothing to do with Russia. Then it was like, oh, well, what's the big deal? Actually, this was kind of a good arrangement. It was super helpful. And, you know, I don't feel bad about it at all. Like, they will just do that. There's no moral consistency and there's no shame. And I think one reason for that is that they steadily have realized there are no consequences.
Right.
You know, as they consolidate power, no one is able to stop them. And so they don't need to even bother with a cover-up. They can just commit the crime in plain sight.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this, and because you're seeing all of those messages coming up with this Kavanaugh thing. You know, one person saying, "Well, you know, should it matter? You know, that was so long ago." You know, even you had Lindsey Graham saying, "You know, this was 36 years ago. It's a 36-year allegation. You know, why should the FBI investigate it?" And you had the other person say, "Well," it was Orrin Hatch, who said, "Well, you know, we'd have to take it. No senator could not take into account to who he's become." Well, I'm sorry, if you didn't atone for it, if you didn't apologize and accept, "Hey, I'm sorry this happened. You know, maybe we saw it differently," whatever. I'm sorry. I'm not buying it.
Yeah. I mean, he shows no remorse. It's also, you know, this is a crime. Like, and it's clear that because this is attempted rape, because this is about a woman, that's why they feel that it's acceptable for him to just move on with his life, even though she could not move on with hers. If Kavanaugh had attempted to, you know, stab somebody and, like, missed, you know, that would be thought of as significant. If he had covered up a guy and covered his mouth while that boy was screaming and screaming, thinking that he was going to be killed by Kavanaugh, which is, you know, something that happened to Dr. Ford, you know, and then threatened, and then Kavanaugh, like, threatens to stab him. Like, that would be obviously considered a big deal by everybody. But because it's about sexual assault, because a woman, a 15-year-old girl, is his victim, they feel that, you know, they can just walk away. And it isn't a surprise, because we already have, you know, Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court. We've been through this. We have Trump, who bragged about, you know, sexually violating women on tape, and has been accused not only of sexual assault, but of rape by, you know, dozens of women. And, you know, they don't care about that either. They don't care about the victims. They don't care about justice, and they're perfectly happy to demonstrate that.
No, well, I mean, it's all about control and power, and it comes down to this as well, because I think you're absolutely right. You know, had it been a guy, that it would have been a different scenario, probably just because it was, you know, because it probably would have been a gay thing, and they would have lost their mind there. But, you know, here's the question that I've been trying to figure out: would it have mattered if Kavanaugh would have come forward and said, "You know what, something happened. Maybe I didn't see it that way," and you know, did that kind of, "I'm sorry. You know, I'm. If that's how it was interpreted, that wasn't what I. You know, I was drunk. I was stupid." Would it have mattered other than the absolute denial? "Was never there. I have no idea what you're talking about." You think it would have mattered?
I mean, it matters in the sense that it's always right to, you know, learn from your mistakes or crimes, in this case, to atone, to express remorse. And of course, to say that to the victim in question, you know, if somebody commits an atrocity in their youth and they genuinely are trying to change, you know, the first thing you would do is make amends to that person, and then you would be open about the incident in question. And in this case, you know, he's denying it. And it's also like, there's a difference between a regular job and being on the Supreme Court. You know, this is the moral arbiter for our nation. You should be a person of the absolute highest caliber. And so while I think, you know, there's room for rehabilitation and redemption in general in life, I don't know if I feel comfortable at all, even if he had apologized to her, with him being on the Supreme Court, because it's quite a thing to do. You know, it's not like he had a speeding ticket or he was shoplifting. You know, he assaulted another human being. And I think no matter what age you are, you know, that's something, it's hard to look beyond that.
No, I'm right there with you. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, there's also the, you know, I look at people like Trump. I look at, you know, this guy. You know, these are people who are entitled. These were wealthy, rich white people who have privilege, who probably were never told no. And I don't want those people in power anywhere, even if they didn't sexually assault someone.
Yeah, there's a huge problem with that. And, you know, you certainly see that in financial crimes, and you see that in people like Stephen Miller or Jared Kushner, who buy their way into various jobs and institutions and then, you know, just devise horrible policies that affect the most vulnerable people. And, you know, I think some of that comes out of their, you know, I don't know, it's a sort of sociopathic mode that I wouldn't necessarily apply to every incredibly wealthy person, but it's a complete detachment from the rest of humanity. You know, if you're not like them, if you're not a wealthy white man, they don't see you as fully human. And that's, you know, an old American story. You know, that's how our voting rights were constructed for a long time. That's why, you know, women and black people, you know, and others who are not wealthy white men were denied them for so long. But it's just incredibly frustrating because, you know, we have had incremental progress, and it feels as if we're very rapidly moving backwards. And while there's a lot of outrage and outcry when I talk to people in everyday life, I don't necessarily see it reflected in the media. You know, I see them excusing Kavanaugh. I see them kind of trying to play down the whole situation. And I think that's because so much of the media comes from those same very wealthy, very elite backgrounds where maybe they did something like this, or maybe, you know, their brother or their friend did something like this. And so if there's going to be consequences for Kavanaugh, there's going to be consequences for all these other entitled, spoiled, horrible people. And so then you just get a, you know, self-perpetuating system that leaves the bulk of American society, that leaves, you know, anyone with a conscience out in the cold.
Yeah, I mean, and I look at Kavanaugh and go, is this the best we can possibly do? Is there no one just as politically, ideologically crazy as he is? That you could swap them out for, and why are you, why is the Republican Party defending this? Why would they put themselves? Because look, I think they're going to be as much on display Monday if the hearing happens as will be Dr. Ford or Brett Kavanaugh. Because like I said, I'm waiting. Who's going to be the next Arlen Specter?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the way that they're standing by him when they could easily find somebody who has the same right wing extremist views who did not commit sexual assault. You know, I assume at least they'll be able to find somebody. But they really want him. And I think that part of that is flaunting this in our faces. You know, Kavanaugh, he put on this wholesome facade, but he's very Trumpian. You know, he's a guy who was a compulsive gambler who racked up an enormous amount of debt that was paid off in unexplained ways, that has a lot of shady, you know, kind of financial ties, and has a history of sexual violence. And I think that, you know, these are all things that it's like they want to show, and they shove this in our face, like, this is acceptable if you're from this background, if you're, you know, a wealthy white DC male, you know, you can do whatever you want. It's like an extension of Trump's when you're a star, you can do anything theory. And it's brutal. I mean, for anyone who's experienced sexual assault, you know, this is a continuation of a very brutal few years from everything from Trump to Roy Moore. Only at least in the case of Trump or Roy Moore, voters were able to put, you know, their input. They were able to prevent Moore from taking office. This is particularly upsetting because it feels like there's nothing we can do to stop it, that power is in the hands of a few very horrible, you know, ethically bankrupt individuals, and the person they're putting, you know, in that position, Kavanaugh, is also morally bankrupt and will be making decisions that affect, you know, the rest of our lives. Like, yeah, he'll be there, you know, until I'm an old woman, you know, assuming like America still exists then. And that's a really horrifying concept.
No, I mean, you know, people like Lindsey Graham, and I thought it was interesting. Lindsey Graham, I guess, was wondering who paid for the polygraph. I guess it's like $300 to do this polygraph. And I think the what came out on Twitter was, you know, well, okay, we might want to know who paid the $300, but who paid off Brett Kavanaugh's credit card bills of like $200,000? Who paid off the country club fees of like $100,000? Who paid off his $1.2 million mortgage and all of that on a federal judge's salary of about, you know, what is it, $190,000-$200,000 a year?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he is so dirty, and he's living his life in a way that is so reminiscent of people like Roy Cohn or Manafort, that they live way beyond their means, that they take, you know, they do favors for people from exceptionally shady backgrounds. I mean, that was how, you know, and Trump too, you know, they often don't actually have cash. They just trade favors for, you know, properties or, you know, other things. You know, like I do wonder how he paid for that stuff and what he did in return. And I think there's a story there, and it's very frustrating, you know, that very few people have been investigating it or taking it seriously in a thorough way. And I don't know why that is. I mean, when I first heard he blew, you know, $200,000 on quote unquote baseball tickets, which, you know, not so coincidentally is what Manafort did as well. It was a way for Manafort to launder money. You know, that was what came to my mind. And I just thought, well, this is exceptionally strange and someone should get to the bottom of it. And then I go on Twitter, and there's all these media people that are like, you know, well, I had season tickets last year. I'm like, what? Like, this isn't normal at all. Is this really how y'all are, like, living your lives? You're all dropping, like, $200K on sports? Like, this is insanity. Like, and it's almost like they come from such a different universe, like, economically and morally, that they don't recognize corruption in front of them because it's so entrenched in their own lives. And that's just an enormous problem. Yeah, I think that's true also of elected officials, you know, because of the amount of money you need these days to enter politics and the amount of dirty money you take. Like, they've almost, the shock value has gone away for this class of people.
No, well, look, the shock for me has gone away. Nothing seems to shock me anymore. Because when the anonymous letter came out, I said eventually we're going to find out who she is. It's not a big universe of people that this could have happened to. Eventually they will find her. She's going to have to come out, and when they do, they will attack her, and which is what they've done. I mean, it's that simple. You brought up Manafort a second ago, and I wanted to also get your thoughts on the potential of a plea deal. That plea deal, is he going to sing? Is this a full throated singing? You know, I know Rudy Giuliani said that that the deal came with no real information or singing on Manafort's part. I'm curious your thoughts.
I've been torn about this. Initially, I thought that this was not going to be a real plea. And most of the reason I thought that is because we had just witnessed what happened with Papadopoulos, who had been, you know, previously thought to be this really helpful person for Mueller, who was cooperating with the investigation and had made a plea deal to do that for a reduced sentence. And it turned out he didn't cooperate at all and was actually impeding the investigation and ended up with only 2 weeks' time. And so I'm thinking, wow, you know, if I'm Manafort and I'm watching that play out and seeing that's how the judicial system is working these days, I would totally do like a fake plea and then just basically not cooperate and get minimal time. But at first I was very annoyed because I kind of thought, like, how can Mueller not see this? But they put a lot of stipulations in that deal about, you know, how much he has to cooperate and about how sentencing will be determined by the level of cooperation that he puts in. I think they're trying to avoid the Papadopoulos situation. And obviously this is much more serious because Manafort, you know, is not just a major player in the Trump campaign, but he's someone who's been enmeshed in GOP politics for over 30 years, who has worked with dictators and oligarchs from around the world, who has inside information on basically everybody in the Trump orbit, including obviously Trump himself. You know, he and I think Michael Cohen are the two most useful people that Mueller could get to flip. So, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say I'm optimistic. I'm like, I'm wary, but you know, I'm leaning now in the direction that this is going to be helpful for the investigation. And my worry remains that even if Mueller does an impeccable job and just shows, you know, incredibly clear proof of criminality, that no one will act on it, you know, that there won't be real repercussions because of Trump, because he's entrenched, because he's packing courts, because he works with, you know, an international mafia that routinely threatens people, blackmails people. That's more my concern than, you know, is Mueller doing a good job, because he is. There's things about how this is going that make me wonder how much those threats and blackmail are already in play. You know, and you can even see it with Kavanaugh and with Christine Ford, you know, running for her life. Like, this has become very common.
Yeah, no, I'm guardedly optimistic, but not overly.
Yeah, exactly.
Last little bit I wanted to get to. I mean, and this is one of those things that just kind of enraged me for a moment. I wanted to get your thoughts. The crayon note from Don Jr., or Dumb Jr., as I call him. I just want to get a reaction from that.
Yeah, he's just a disgusting human being, and he always has been. I mean, I'll never forget the, you know, Skittles refugee analogy from campaign, or the white supremacist rhetoric that he promoted during the campaign. I mean, he's an absolutely terrible person. You know, he's somebody who I think, you know, I don't have any sympathy for, but I think he's psychologically damaged from having grown up in that family with, you know, when he was a child. He said basically Trump was an abusive father, that he didn't love him, you know, meaning that Trump did not love Donald Trump Jr. He only loved money. He told that to Vanity Fair. And now he just seems to want to do anything to win his father's approval. So there's a sort of, I guess, Shakespearean element to it. But I mean, you know, my sympathy for Donald Trump Jr. is just zero. I think he's implicated in this plot against our country, and I hope he goes to jail. And this is just, you know, what he wrote, this mockery of sexual assault, is just one more item in a long catalog of disgusting behavior for him.
You know, I'm looking towards November. Can this be that? Because I said yesterday, I thought that this could be one of those moments where maybe the female vote goes like 70% to Democrats when Republicans booger this up. Is that remotely possible? Do you think that it could be this kind of watershed moment that women wake up and go, this party has really abandoned us, or are we already too entrenched?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're already at that point. In some ways, this mirrors what I just said about the Mueller probe. I think people are, you know, woken up in general. They're engaged, they're active. You could look at the turnout of the special elections, which has been incredibly high, and where Democrats have generally done very well, you know, sometimes flipping districts that had gone overwhelmingly for Trump. And I certainly think women are enraged by this situation. You know, it doesn't mean across the board women are going to vote Democrat, but yes, you know, I do think it's more likely. I'm just not sure that we're going to have free and fair elections. And I think I've been on your show saying that since basically January 2017, and everything that's happened since then lends some credence to that claim. You know, they will attempt voter suppression. They will probably attempt hacking, or their partners will. They may also use hacking as an excuse to deem Democratic wins illegitimate, falsely claiming that they were hacked, or they just might not concede. You know, their boldness really concerns me. They might just say, like, yeah, you know, democracy's done. It was nice while it lasted. Now we're a one-party state, and there's nothing you can do about it. And, you know, they don't seem to be worrying too much that Kavanaugh is going to cost them female voters. And, you know, that's a very ominous sign, because, like I said, they could switch him out. They could find some other right-wing extremist to fill that slot. But they want him there. And I think that that's, you know, that's frightening, because it just shows they do not fear any consequences. And so we have to, of course, ask, you know, well, why? Why don't you? So that's the disturbing question.
It'll be interesting
to see,
for a while. It'll be interesting to see how Monday plays out and what comes of it. And we'd love to have you back and share some thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Good stuff. Sarah, I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you.
All right. Thank you.
Always good talking to our good friend Sarah Kendzior. Again, check out the podcast, Gaslit Nation, new episode out today. Most certainly check that out. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.